it's almost like they have to learn, you know, I wouldn't say it quite to the extent of like the working cow horse, you know, they have to do three events, but we're essentially asking our sorting horses, I'd like to think of it, we're asking them to do two different things. We're asking them to hold a cow like they're cutting, and then the best comparison is to kind of go to a cow like they would in the cow horse going down the fence almost, except they also have to go through 10 other cows while they're doing it. So we're asking them to do two different things. And like my philosophy that we kind of hit on earlier, I want them to be cutting horses first. And then once you're really sure about a cow, then we'll teach you to do this other thing.
You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to The Ride, a podcast brought to you by Horse and Rider Magazine, hosted by Nicole Cherico and Emily Carey. This episode of The Ride is brought to you by Tribute Equine Nutrition. Let's be honest, no two horses are the same, so why do so many of us feed them like they are? Tribute Equine Nutrition's equine nutrition specialists help you create personalized feeding plans based on your horses and your goals. Their feeds are backed by a 100% money-back guarantee made in their own Ionophore-free facilities and are fixed formulas you can trust. And if you're new to Tribute, your first bag is free, so you can try it with confidence. Take the stress out of feeding your horse. Visit TributeEquineNutrition.com to get started and let them know Horse and Rider sent you. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Ride. This is your host, Nicole Cherico, and today I am sitting down to talk with Cody Ward. Cody Ward trains out of the Lazy JWC Ranch in Fort Lupton, Colorado. He's a multiple-time USTPA, RSNC, and AQHYA world champion, and he is also in the RSNC Hall of Fame. On top of competing at top events, he enjoys giving lessons, training, and selling horses. And he also recently did a video series for us on Ride TV where we talk a little bit about the basics of ranch sorting and help people get involved in the sport. Thank you so much for coming on, Cody.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is really, really cool. Excited.
So for anyone who may not be familiar with who you are or the sport of ranch sorting, can you give us a little rundown of how you kind of got involved with horses and where your journey just in the horse industry began?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've kind of always had horses around ever since I was a little kid. My dad's big dream. He grew up in town in Longmont, Colorado, but just grew up in town and played sports and stuff. And since he was a kid, he just kind of always wanted to be a cowboy. So when he graduated college and got married, my mom and him bought a place, and we lived at a different place for a little while, but they, as soon as they got out of college and got some money put together, they bought some horses. And then we just kind of always had some trail horses around. And then, my dad did landscaping and reclamation work, and a guy that worked for us had some horses and did the ranch sorting and team penning. And he just saw that we had some horses one day when he was at the house, and he said, "Hey, there's a sorting practice going on like a few miles down the road from your guys' house. You should come down and try it." So we just took our trail horses down there and tried it and had a good time. And I was pretty young still. I was like 10. But my dad got big into it, and he liked competing. He played college sports and stuff. So he got big into it and started traveling kind of that first year and met some other really good friends, Dwayne and Amber Hayslip, who used to live up here in Colorado. And from there, he went to a couple big shows with them, and he bought a good horse at one of those shows and then came home and was like, "Okay, this is what we're going to do." So it kind of all started from there.
So you got hooked at a young age, and you kind of did a little bit of other disciplines, right? You have a little bit of a background in cutting. We've talked about how you do some of the team penning. You did a little bit of rodeoing as a high school kid. How did you kind of find your kind of path into ranch sorting? And that's where you spend a majority of your time. What kind of led you to that discipline, and why did you kind of find it and decide that you were going to be a professional in it?
Yeah, well, I certainly started, my whole family's, you know, competitive career in horses started in the ranch sorting and team penning. They kind of, especially then, like, they ran together. Like, every show we would have gone to had both events at it, except for some of the early RSNC shows. But we did a lot more USTPA and another local association. So it had both events. But we started there, and then my sister got introduced to Fallon Taylor, who we're still really good friends with. But so she's kind of started barrel racing. Well, then that led to junior high rodeo. And then when she started junior high rodeo, and I was like, well, shoot, her and my dad are gone, you know, a bunch of weekends doing that, I may as well try it. But I wasn't real big into rodeo right there at the beginning of high school. And I was like, well, cutting, that's a cow. That's, you know, I can kind of figure that out. So I thought, right? So then I found somebody who had a cutting horse, like a straight cutting horse. And then I got into that for a while in the high school. And then I was like, well, shoot, I'm at the high school rodeos anyways, I may as well try some of this other stuff. So got into that for a little bit and really liked the cutting. And I'm super lucky, like Kenny Platt. He won the fraternity last year. He's won $4 million. You know, he's an NCHA Hall of Fame trainer. He lives 10 minutes from us. So we were lucky when we were in high school learning how to cut. We had, you know, one of the best guys in the world live right down the road. So we went to go out. We would go out there and do some lessons with him and ride with him and stuff, which I don't know if he would consider them lessons, because he was like, be here at this time and I want to be done 30 minutes after you get here, so be ready to go. But he's awesome. He's such a cool guy. And then, so after that, we just kind of, you know, you get to the end of high school, and the whole time I'd been kind of keeping up with the penning and sorting. But really the big thing was I went, when I was 16, I went and worked for Tom and Michaela Thorlickson in Airdrie, Alberta, and they run a big feedlot, and we went up there, and they had a lot of team penning horses at the time, and got to learn more about the business side of it, and really just went because I wanted to go back to Calgary to the team penning there, and I thought it would be cool, and they invited me up to come work. And then after that, it's like, oh, we can kind of, you know, learned more about selling horses and stuff and dealing with customers. And then I was like, okay, maybe I should get back into this more. And then from there, met some other people, the Rubies. And that's really where I started getting back into the penning and sorting heavily, because they had a son, Tanner's my best friend, and they were going to a lot of shows because they just started to get big into it. And they invited me to go to a lot of the shows. So I kind of pushed the high school rodeo stuff out of the way a little bit that last year, and was like, okay, I'm gonna try and focus on the team penning and sorting more. And then that was when I started getting a lot better, when I put my time into it. And then I wish there was a better way I got into the trading side, but I just kind of fell into it because I was getting a lot better and becoming an open rider. And at these shows, you know, just got lucky and had some people say, well, would you take this horse home and ride it for us for a while and see if you can get it doing some of these things better? And then it just blossomed from there. And then once I got that established a little bit, Tom and Michaela came back in from Alberta, and we partnered on some horses that I got seasoned and sold, and did that for a while. And that was really cool working with them. So they got me my start buying and selling some of these horses. And then from there, I kind of was able to branch out on my own. But yeah, that's a long-winded answer of saying how I got focused on it. But yeah.
No, it's great. You've mentioned quite a few people who have been a big part of your shaping as a horse trainer. Was there any kind of philosophies that you really took to heart that kind of helped you build your training business so it could be as successful as it is today?
Well, you know, there's obviously lots of people. Tom Thorlickson was huge on the business side of it for sure. And he's a guy that doesn't really say a lot, but when he does, you should probably listen. And, he helped me a lot on the business side, just being smarter about, you know, making it work money wise. In that, you know, oftentimes you get lost and kind of just like, you know, you want this horse and that horse and everything, and people can just get a little too attracted to maybe the flashy stuff, and you got to make sure that it still pencils. So he taught me a lot about that. And then just a lot of little intricacies about, you know, making horses look right and everything. But as far as riding wise, just, I was that kid that would really bother some of the trainers, like just kind of follow them around. Like, I'm sure for a while, Tanner Keith got sick of me, because I would just, I'm not riding in the open at all. And I'd just go ride up to him on a horse and start a conversation and just try and pester him. And then just watch him a lot. But Tanner Keith had a big impact, and you take bits and pieces from everybody. But Tanner was big, and just, he was very helpful in talking to me a lot about some of that stuff, and just getting it set up. And then I am a huge fan of the cutting, and I am still a religious follower of the Cutting Horse Training Online. So I haven't necessarily got to go ride with any of these guys besides Kenny Platt, and then I got to ride with Jesse Lennox for a day. But just watch a lot of those videos, and I think then took from some of that and got to overlap it. And there's so many people that have helped. And James and Remy Gear, spent some time with them, going to a lot of their shows. And then the last couple of years, I think what's really helped is I rode with Joel Lesh a lot, not necessarily at his house, but just riding at the shows a lot with him. And just pulling bits and pieces from everybody, because everybody does it a little bit different. But like, he really helped me just be critical of how does it actually function within the pen. Like, everything can look pretty, but just how does it function? And then the person I work with the most now probably is Matt Stevens, and it's cool. I think we have similar philosophies on how we want horses to feel. And we kind of ride similar, so that's huge. And he's a wealth of knowledge, so get to ask him questions and figure that out. But it's really nice being able to work with him, and we work together on some other stuff as well outside of just training horses. So yeah, but I mean, there's so many people, but those are some of the main ones that I can think of that I learned from a lot.
You said that you had a similar philosophy about how you like your horses to go around. What does that feel like to you? What is your philosophy?
Well, I think they do a lot of things right out of the cutting pen. And, if we can just leave a lot of that in there, you know, a lot of draw in your turns, and you want a horse to really kind of drop that front foot front. You know, if you're turning right, drop that front right foot and that back right foot back through a turn instead of stepping over themselves, and just keeping horses really cowy and wanting to work a cow. So we have a very similar philosophy there. And Matt worked in the cutting horse industry for a long time. So, and, you know, we just kind of fell into it working together and just talking about it, and we are both big fans of cutting, so it keeps it easy to keep that philosophy the same. But a lot of the same principles from the cutting pen, and then, you know, the only, I think, as far as the sorting goes, if you can maintain a lot of the cutting principles in the gate, then all we got to do is get them to go through the herd effectively, which can be a struggle in of itself. But I think if you can, if they can cut and you can control them, they can work the gate. And so that takes half of the battle away anyways. But yeah, and then the herd work's a different deal. But yeah, it was just a lot of cutting principles, I guess.
Yeah, kind of that finesse that comes with it, where that's really that soft, pretty, the draw, everything.
Draw. Yeah, draw. And you can't copy Matt's accent, but a lot of draw. That's what we want. If you can get that, that's half the battle right there.
I love it. I love it. Kind of switching, we've talked about some of the trainers who have kind of helped you in your career. Let's switch over to the horses. Have there been any horses that have kind of taught you the most in your career that kind of helped you get to the next level as a trainer and a rider?
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of horses, and I say a lot. I probably wrecked more good ones along the way than I made, you know. But a few that really stand out to me, and I'm still learning, like, we'll get to this horse, but a few at the beginning, I had this mare named Smooth as a Jewel. I actually won the Quarter Horse Youth World in the Sorting Honor, the only time I ever won it, which is its own thing. I probably went there for 10 years and was, you know, the best teams on paper probably half of those years and only won it once. But this mare, Smooth as a Jewel, I got her from Kenny Platt. His son named her Corn, so Corn. But she taught me a lot because she was it was just stupid. Like, I should have wrecked her because I got her right when she turned four and seasoned her not enough at home, and then just started taking her, and she just took it so well. And that was the first, really the first four-year-old, a young horse like that, that I got to kind of go through everything on. And she handled it way better than she ever should have. I should have blown that horse up probably three times in the first 6 months I had her. And she would get a little hot and a little bit strung out, but she would kind of just, she would really gave me a lot of leash to be like, hey, you need to fix this stuff before we go again. And that was the first horse that I felt like I, you know, kind of did the whole thing on and sold her for, at the time, it was a lot of money. And now you look back, cause horse prices have changed so much and it doesn't seem like that much, but, and she was the first horse that I was able to kind of keep in my barn for customers after they bought her and got to show and win on her. And that was cool. I think that really helped because I remember this one show of the Cisco's that we were at in Queen Creek, Arizona. They were running the sorting in one arena, and then like the open sort was in one arena. That's our top level class. And then in the other arena, they were running the number five team penning class. So a pretty low rated, you know, beginner novice rated penning class. Well, I rode her. The people who owned her, Matt and Chris Lane, were at the show, and they were riding her in that. Matt was riding her in that five class. And I made it in the open sort finals, and I was like, the cattle were really tough, and I was last out, and I was like, I need that horse. So I go and get her from them, and they were so gracious. They always let me ride her whenever I needed her. And I go and grab her, win the open sort on her, and then we're taking the picture for the open sort, and Matt Lane is up in the finals of the five pen. So we, you know, change stirrups, put a different bit on her. He takes her into the penning and wins the number five pen on her in a span of, you know, 15 minutes. And that was cool. Like, that horse just taught me so much, and she was so versatile. And I think she really helped put my name out there anyways. But that was all her. And then another mare that we've got, Pebble, she still lives at our house. And we show her a little bit, but she was the first horse that really for all of Corn's awesomeness, she just stayed pretty level. You know, she was the same horse in the first round as she was in the finals. But this Pebbles mare, her name's Smooth Bambi Kitty. They're both smooth as a cat mares. She was the first horse that showed me, like, that really taught me that horses can care, like, and understand the difference between, you know, this is just a little show and, you know, a first round run or like a finals. And in this mare, she cares when it's the finals. Like, you can just feel it in her. It's hard to explain, but, you know, in the first round, she's pretty good, pretty solid, doesn't do anything real athletic, just just kind of gets you to the right spots. But if you go to ride this horse in the finals, like you can just feel her heart beating through the cinch, and she really cares. So that was the first horse that showed me that was like, oh, you know, they have a stake in this too. It's not just a good or a bad horse or whatever. You know, some of them, that kind of next level of a horse that really has a lot of try. And then the one that I've been learning from all the time is a mare that you guys videoed on our Ride TV series, that bald face mare, Harley. She's a one-time royalty mare that Kenny Platt also trained as a three-year-old. But she's just like the next level of horse, just like a monster athlete. She is so cowy and just kind of that next level. And she's maybe not what we would call typically my style. Like I like to be able to kick on one a little bit and have them with a lot of draw. And like, you're always kind of pushing them forward. And this mare is very forward and feely. And, you know, if you look at her the wrong way, she might kind of jump out from underneath of you. So that horse is still teaching me a lot, but she's given me a lot of confidence. Like I started her too at the beginning of this year in the sorting, and she's just given me so much confidence to be like, oh, you can ride this kind of horse too and do a good job with her. And I think we've done a good job with her so far. And she's turning into one of the better horses that I've ever had. So just those three are, and it helps. They're kind of my favorite three as well. So that sure helps their case for being impactful. Yeah.
We also, during the video shoot, bonded over our love of mares, which I don't find many horse trainers that are like, I just want a mare. And I was like, yep, I'm with you. Yeah. I like a good mare.
Yeah. I hated gelding. Like, I've ridden lots of good ones.
They're dull. They're just like kind of.
They're just annoying too. It's like you can, a gelding, you got to remind them 17 times, like, don't chew on the fence. In a mare, you can like smack them on the forehead and be like, don't do that. And you walk past that spot for the next 10 days and they stop and throw their head up like, oh, he's going to smack me again. You know, they just, they're a lot smarter, I feel like.
They're a lot smarter.
Yeah, which I think.
They're more opinionated, but if you know how to get along with them.
Yeah, certainly.
They'll do everything.
Yeah, you got to, I'd like to say, you know, gelding, you just got to tell them. And you just tell them this is how it's going to be. And sometimes you got to tell them really loud. And a mare, you got to kind of negotiate with quite a bit. But once you get your terms laid out, they usually stick to them. That's kind of like women, I guess. They're just a lot smarter than we are. So you got to ease around them a little bit more. But
oh, I love it. All right. Favorite run, kind of going off of the horses. We've talked a little bit about you took those horses up to some pretty cool events and did well. But is there a run that stands out to you that you still think about today?
Yeah, one that gives me, on the questions we can talk about, you said something that maybe gives you goosebumps. And that run at the Quarter Horse Youth World Show on that corn mare in the finals, that one, it's my favorite because we won and it's over with. But I was riding with Callie Brookshire, and it came down to like, this is the, I had three horses in the finals, no time the first one, had a pretty good run on the second horse. And this was the last one, and ended up second on the other horse. So it doesn't seem like that big of a deal, but I didn't think it would hold. So I'm like, this, we got to make this one work. And the first four cows, it was clicking along so good. And Callie goes in for the fifth cow, and she turned it, and like, it was totally clean and everything. And this cow just kind of like locks up in the back end and falls down. And Callie's like 10 feet away from it. And I'm turning cows on the other side, and I look back, I'm like, what is taking so long? And I see this cow laying on the ground, and I'm like, everything went through my head. I was like, are you kidding me? Like, I'm not ever going to win this stupid show because a cow fell down in the finals. In the first four, like, rolled out so fast, one of those deals where you know a good run is coming. And because we would have got a reride, like theoretically, right? If that cow would have stayed down, we would have got a reride. But, you know, we have four cows out in 10 seconds. Like, and I was like, are you shitting me? This isn't gonna, anyways, it worked out though. The cow stood up and it just one of those things where it was like, well, I can't do anything about it. So I tried to just do my job on the other side, and the cow stood up and ran out, and then we got rolling again, and it worked out. But that one gives me goosebumps when I think about it, because I just have never had so many thoughts flash through my head all at once. And I was like, are you kidding me? We're not gonna win this because of a stupid cow fell down. And yeah, and then another one that comes to mind is the first year that I won the Futurity with Joel Lesh in 2023 on a mare named Chex Party Mix Opal that Scott and Dina Finley owned. That was cool because we were one of the fastest times out of the first round. Had a good run in the second round. So we're leading it going into the finals. And it was just one of those, you know, it seemed like I'm almost better off if we just need to have like a couple of cows or run like a 10. You know what I mean? Just makes the plan a lot easier. And this was one of those where it was like, if we run 7 or 8 head, you know, we're going to win. But in just being smart, and there was a lot of nerves for me in that. And when that was over with, and like getting through the run was cool. And then the next team after us had a chance. I mean, they would have had to have a really cool run, but that run gives me goosebumps because it was just like a big relief winning that Futurity finally. Not that I'd been shown in it for 10 years or anything, but it seemed like a long time coming. I got second a couple of times before it. But those two runs stick out just because it was something that I'm not maybe the most goal-oriented person, but those were two that I was like, I need to win these. And so that was cool. Those two horses let me do that. So that was exciting. Those two stand out.
I have my own youth world traumas, so I relate.
Yeah, that freaking place. Like,
except I'm older than you, so I was in Fort Worth.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. You don't. Yeah.
That's funny. I'll have to. Yeah. But anyway, okay. So we've talked. This is a great segue. So the Ranch Sorting Futurities. We talk about them on the Ride TV series. You're super passionate about them, and I got to learn a little bit more about them when we were at your place doing these videos, because this is still a very new sport for me. Yep. So for those who might not be familiar, obviously Futurity means something very different in each discipline. So can you kind of break down like what age the horses are and kind of like what the goal is with these Futurities that are starting to kind of amp up?
Yeah. So, the Sorting Futurities, they have to be 4 years old or younger. I would say the vast majority of horses that get shown in the Futurity are 4 year olds. That being said, there are a few 3 year olds that compete. And I think as these Futurities expand, we might have to kind of go back in and look at some of that again. But I think that'll lead into a whole different deal of aged events. But yeah, currently it's 4 year olds and younger. And it started out, I bet they've been having a Futurity at the World Finals for, oh, I bet 8 years now, maybe 9 years. And it used to be you'd have 1 4-year old in the herd doing the herd work, and then you could have any aged horse holding the gate for you. And it's still that way in the non-pro Futurity for 5 and lower rated riders, but in the open for 6 and above, it's now 2 4-year olds. And Futurity, typically it was just 1 Futurity at the World Finals, big class, you know, and it's a high entry fee, but super high payout. And, but this year they've expanded it, and myself, Matt Stevens, and Logan Wolf, we've worked together. Matt Stevens and I are huge proponents of the Futurities. We think, you know, if you look at any other Western industry, the cutting, the cow horse, the reining, it's all geared around the aged event horses, the, you know, and especially the futurity horses. If you talk to any cutter, that's what they want to do is win the futurity, right? And even though there's these other small futurities, they're all talking about this futurity that's going on right now in Fort Worth. So we're really passionate about that. And we got Logan talked into putting some futurities on at some of our other big events. So we had one at the Eastern States Finals in Tunica, one at the Western States Finals in Reno. And then there's going to be one in Vegas at the All-Star Sorting this weekend. But we're just super passionate about it. We think that's what the future is. And it's just an awesome opportunity for owners and us as trainers to you know, kind of go pick out the horse that we like and something that fits us. And then our biggest thing, and I shouldn't say our, but my, for sure, speaking for myself, my biggest thing is I think it's going to make better, more sustainable sorting horses. Because to get these four-year-olds to work, and especially as we keep adding more futurities to where we're going to have a little, you know, kind of futurity show season, to get these four-year-olds to work at a high level that long, that early in their career, you have to put a very good foundation on them and get them early, you know, at the end of their three-year-old year or beginning of their four-year-old year, and you have to take your time and put a really good foundation on them. And I think that's going to really help us create more sustainable sorting horses. That's probably one of our biggest problems in this industry right now is there's a lot of turnover of horses, and it's a really intense thing on a horse's brain. And some of these horses maybe get pushed into it a little bit too quick as far as competing without having a really good understanding of what they're doing. And so we see a lot of turnover in that. And that's the really tricky thing, I think, that's maybe holding our industry back just a little bit, is that there is so much turnover. Well, it's hard to, you know, sell a six-figure sorting horse when you are looking at potentially only getting, you know, 2 years of really, really high quality competition out of that horse. Not saying that that is the case all the time, but you definitely see a fair amount of turnover in our horses. So I think starting them a little bit younger and just a more of an emphasis on these futurity horses is going to make us have a better product overall. And then I guess I should throw in our Matt Stevens and I, we have our Trailblazer incentive. So horses that were purchased directly from Matt or I, we have a special incentive, and we add it not just to the futurity classes. We've added it to some other classes like the number 10 class at the World Finals. And we put it in the 10 shootout, in Reno at the Western States Finals. But we put it in every futurity, every non-pro futurity they have. We put our incentive in there, and we'll continue to do that. You know, if RSNC or any other production association puts on a non-pro futurity, we'll put money to it because we really do believe in it. And we think that's where the future is going. So yeah, I can't be positive enough about the futurities. I should say I believe in them.
I think that's great. I think it's really cool. You're kind of seeing the evolution of ranch sorting, right? As it grows in popularity and we're seeing more events and we're seeing more money backing it, you know, more people are getting excited about it. And then, you know, now we're kind of evolving more into the aged events where you're competing against horses that are at the same kind of, you know, point in their training career. You're not, you know, it's cool.
Yeah.
It levels the playing field.
Yes, absolutely. Right. And especially on the, I mean, there's a wide range. We have the rating, you know, the rating handicap system, but once you get to at any point, you're going to have a wide range of horses. Right. But you know, these four-year-olds, it just makes, you know, no one, I wouldn't say, has them anytime before they're three, you know, so we kind of all are starting at the same point. And I think it's cool too. You just get to see everyone's different. And I think everyone puts a little bit of their own style on all their four-year-olds. So you get to see just a little bit of what everyone's are about. And it just keeps new horses coming into the sport all the time. And it keeps owners excited. I think that's the big thing is, like, that's really happened in the last year or two is, you know, the futurity used to just be, like, the first couple of years I showed in it, it was like, if you have a four-year-old, let's enter, you know, or somebody just happens to have a few. Because they've been in the industry for a long time. It's not just like we just started showing four-year-olds, but it was more of an afterthought. Like, oh, are you going to have any four-year-olds for the futurity? And now, you know, we've got people, like, I've got customers at this point in the year that are, and even before now, that have seen the futurities grow, and they're like, hey, we need, like, let's find one for next year. And which is really cool because, you know, and it just gets people excited about it. And, you know, because just like us as trainers like to watch these horses grow and progress, I think owners too like to follow that journey of, you know, getting a prospect and picking one out and then getting to see how they progress. And then, you know, a lot of these owners too, they, you know, they're doing this for fun, but they're, you know, a lot of successful business people and they're competitive. And maybe this gives them another outlet to be competitive in. You know, people are proud of their horses, and this futurity thing is just another reason for them to be. So it's cool for the owners as well.
I kind of like that too, that you guys are riding them in the futurity stuff until they're four. It gives these horses kind of an extra year to mature and really figure out their job without, you know, straining them or burning them out. Cause man, you know, it takes a special 3-year-old to compete at that high level of the cutting futurity, the cow horse, the reining, any of it. And so it's really cool that there's an opportunity for some of these, like maybe late bloomers or, you know, took them a minute to grow or whatever it might be to have a place in the industry.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think our deal is like the first, it's almost like they have to learn, you know, I wouldn't say it quite to the extent of like the working cow horse, you know, they have to do 3 events, but we're essentially asking our sorting horses, I like to think of it, we're asking them to do 2 different things. We're asking them to hold a cow like they're cutting. And then the best comparison is to kind of go to a cow like they would in the cow horse going down the fence almost, except they also have to go through 10 other cows while they're doing it. So we're asking them to do 2 different things. And like my philosophy that we kind of hit on earlier, I want them to be cutting horses first. And then once you're really sure about a cow, then we'll teach you to do this other thing. So yeah, I think 4-year-olds is the right thing. And it does let them grow up just a little bit more. And for their brain is the biggest thing. Because a lot of the, I mean, I don't know if you followed the cutting futurity at all, but I'm a huge fan. Like watching those 3-year-olds, like they're plenty athletic enough to do anything I could ever ask them to do in the sorting pen. But you know, not putting, like, our first futurity's in June, right? June of their 4-year-old year. So we've got another 6-7 months after this cutting, after the cutting futurity season wraps up for their mind to develop and to teach them this new thing. So it's super cool. They've got plenty of time, and you can have a horse really, really solid and ready to roll before that, the first time they ever have to get shown in a futurity. So it's cool.
So let's kind of talk a little bit. We've already touched on some of this, but let's talk a little bit about the horses that you tend to find excel in the ranch sorting. Obviously, cutting is something that you like them to have a background on, or breeding, just because that's the way that you like your horses to feel. But what are you kind of looking for when you're shopping for a prospect?
Yeah, you know, it's totally dependent on, I can't believe there's still flies alive right now. That means it's been way too cold.
It's been cold in Colorado. Why are there still flies?
Yeah, exactly. You know, obviously it's the cool thing about our industry is we can, there's room for somebody to play at every level, right? In speaking monetarily, like there's room for the $15,000 horse and there's room for the $50,000 plus horse, right? And so looking at prospects just depends on, you know, if I'm buying for myself or for a customer and what they're able to spend in all those things. But just for myself, I want to look for something, you know, I've got my favorite bloodlines, but something that's been cut on, and I like something that's pretty stout. Like, I want them to be wide. They don't necessarily have to be super tall, but a stout horse, you know, something with a big hip on them, a big butt. And because we're going to ask them to get down and crawl around a bunch. So especially if they're kind of wide in the back end, I like that. I think it gives them a good base. And then kind of been toying with this idea of having a horse that's maybe a little bit more narrow up front. And talked with Brant Clark a lot about this and just the muscle structure of a horse's front end and their shoulders and thinking about how that all ties together. Cause the typical thing is like, you want a big blocky, you know, just built like a brick crap house, you know, cutter, right? Wide everywhere. But I think something maybe a little bit narrower in the front, you know, you don't want them to just be a narrow horse all the way around, but something with enough hip that's a little bit narrower up front just allows them to be a little bit more mobile in those shoulders. And then something that's a good mover. I think that's maybe an underrated thing that we have to look at is like a lot of horses can cut because they get to kind of hold their head wherever they want. You know, some cutters will hold it up high and some stick their nose on the ground. Well, if you try and sort on a horse that has their nose 2 inches off the ground, it does not feel very good. It's hard to keep them in your hands. So something that wants to travel a little bit more upright, with not a high headset necessarily, but I want them to kind of fit that shape, if you will, of like a reined cow horse moving, something that'll pick up their front end. But yeah, something with a cutting foundation, but, and then you kind of have to weed through those, something that's a good mover. And then if I'm able to go try the horse, I want something that isn't offended about getting handled in their mouth. Like some of the best cutters I've rode, when you pick up your bridle reins, they feel like a 2x4, and they're awesome horses. I have owned a few of them, but those are a little bit more difficult to sort on. So something that's got a lot of bend in their neck, I like quite a bit. And then, yeah, from there, I mean, but you can make any kind of individual work, and then it's just going to look at the individual, you know, cause I will and own horses that go against all the things I just said, but I like them as enough as individuals that you kind of can overlook some things. So something that's got a lot of try, like there, that's probably my number one thing. If I'm looking for a prospect for myself, we can work out all the other stuff if they've got a lot of try and grit. Cause they're gonna have cows right there in their chest, you know, no matter what, it's gonna happen at some point. So something that doesn't want to give up on you. And that's where I kind of lean a little bit towards mares, just cause they seem to take it a little bit more personal. But a mare won't work for everybody. So kind of keep options open, but yeah, those are some things I look for when I'm looking for a prospect, especially.
I like it. So we've talked a little bit about the horse, but the great thing about range sorting is that those who are maybe just getting involved in the sport or new to riding in general, they can kind of start in this industry with just about anything that they might own to kind of get a taste for it. And then obviously as you get better and you win more money, you're going to need a certain kind of horse to be competitive. But it's a really cool industry because so many people from so many disciplines are able to kind of get involved. Like you said, you started on a trail riding horse, and you're not the first person to tell me that they've started on a trail riding horse and now their lifetime earnings are over $100,000. Like it's really cool. So for those who are maybe wanting to get involved, what is your advice? Like what do you recommend somebody do, whether it's go to a clinic, go to a horse show, reach out to somebody? If I were going to be like, hey, I want to do the ranch sorting next week, what are you going to tell me?
Yeah. Well, the first thing is we're very lucky with Ride TV, with like, I have a Patreon, with YouTube, with all this stuff, like you can go find it. So the first thing I would do is watch some videos of it. Whether they're instructional videos or just videos of people competing, and get a bit of an understanding of what it is. And then, you know, the RSNC website is a great place to look for some trainers, find a trainer in your area. And, you know, that's the tricky thing. We do a good job of highlighting maybe the top end trainers, right, in our industry. But I would be totally honest, like, it's hard to get in maybe with those people, you know, like, I don't take just a bunch of super, super beginners. That being said, I do have one lady that I got from Jill Cook Center My Way, a cow horse trainer in Colorado here. And because she just, her horse wasn't going to do the cow horse, you know, just a real ranch kind of horse. So she's been coming in riding for about a year. And we've worked a lot on just some dry work stuff. And she has gone to a few sortings now. And she won a beginner buckle 2 weeks ago at one of the wolf shows. And that was her first buckle she's ever won, an older lady that's been riding her whole life. But I promise you can do it on anything. If we could get this horse to sort a little bit, you can do it on anything, because this isn't a real talented kind of horse. And I don't think she'll be offended with me saying that. We've talked about it lots. But just looking into, you find ways to educate yourself, and then understand, too, the more effort that, it's like anything, the more effort you put into it and are willing to practice and understand not only how the game works, but how do I get my horse to move, to understand and do this effectively, the better off you'll be. And all you can do is, like, this is my huge thing. If I've got questions, ask, you know, whether or not in whether you're at a show or wherever, like, if you, I would say the great thing about ranch sorting is you can find one in your area and it's relatively cheap to go to, especially at the beginner levels. So just go to a couple shows. Once you understand a good idea of it, ride that beginner class, talk to people at the show. And that's where I'm big on watching some videos before, because if you watch some videos and kind of get an understanding of it, and then you go to a couple of these shows, you'll be able to identify who are the top end of the competitors there. And then just go ask them a couple of questions. You know, I would say very rarely in our industry do you find people that won't answer questions for a beginner. And just from there, just start building on your bank of knowledge. And the more time you can spend on a horse, on your horse, working on different drills and maneuvers, the better off you'll be, for sure.
I love that. So I guess my next question, because, you know, what would be a misconception people have about it, and what do you wish the riders had have a better understanding of, right?
Yeah.
I know we've kind of touched on this a little bit, but
I think there's lots of misconceptions, and some of them aren't, you know, totally unfounded. You know, I think there's the thing that's just a bunch of yahoos on horses and snaffle bits, you know, yanking their faces off and stuff. And there is plenty of that, you know, in the industry. But there's also, it's really turning into something that is, you know, starting to become a specialized event that, in, you know, there's lots of us that are out here every day working these horses, trying to get better. It's not just like, you know, it's moving less away from just buying something out of the cutting pen and trot them through the cows a few times and let's go to the sorting, you know, at the highest level, right? So, you know, there's guys, you know, lots of guys just like me that are out here working these horses and trying to get them better and trying new tactics and strategies and, you know, different training things to get these horses better and more specialized. So I think that's a misconception. And then that, you know, it's not all just yelling and screaming and pulling on them. And it can look really cool and have a lot of flow to it. And that's something, you know, that we're still working on as an industry, but it's evolving. And I think we're getting more specialized and getting better horses and better, becoming better horsemen in the industry and better competitors and stuff. And I think now more so than ever, there's more people, not just at the top end, but people coming up through the ranks that are really interested in not only getting better and winning, but becoming better riders and having a better understanding of what makes these horses do these things. Whereas maybe a little bit more so in the past, people were just like, how do I get to that next level of winning? And now more than ever, and I'm very lucky to be training in this time, because I've got more customers that, come to me and just want to learn and they can go to a show and they're okay if they feel like their horse got better and they got better if they didn't necessarily win, because there's a lot of things that go on during a sorting run that are out of our control. And but you see people now being more focused on the educational side and becoming better horsemen and women and getting better horses and working on that. So I think that's a misconception. It's not just all a bunch of yahoos yelling and screaming and pulling around in snaffles.
I could see it being chaotic to someone who doesn't understand what is happening, but yeah, the ranch sorting is really cool because it's very black and white, right? Like you're either going to win or you're not. There's no judging. There's no, you know, this person likes this style over that style. It's, can you get your, you know, cows in order through the, you know, gates and, you know, do what you got to do as a team. And so I think that's what makes it a really fun event, is that if you lose, it's not because the judge liked so-and-so and there's politics or someone spent $500,000 on a horse. It's no, they just got their cows through faster. Maybe they had better communication with their horse or their teammate or whatever it might be. But it's very black and white and easy for people to understand once they actually participate.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the first things my dad said when we were younger, in looking at all this stuff, and he likes the timed events. If we were rodeoing and doing all that stuff, he liked the timed events a lot better. There's no politics. It's just, what does the clock say? And especially when we started cutting a little bit and have some disagreeing opinions, and he's like, see, this is why we do timed events, because then it's very easy to understand. We don't have to go look at the judge's card afterwards. So I agree with that. It makes it easy to follow and it's very easy for people to understand once they get into it. And it looks less and less, you know, there are runs obviously that are super chaotic. It's just like, there's a top end and a bottom end to any industry, right? I've been to some weekend cuttings that are not awesome. And, you know, school and horses and stuff. And I've been to lots of sortings that are the same way. And I've been to some sortings that are really cool. And you run a set of finals and every horse in the finals is awesome. And the riders are awesome, right? So there's a top and a bottom end to anything. And then I think the other thing too that people should understand is in working cattle and stuff is like, we're not always necessarily just like, walking through them on the ranch, like especially sorting cows and calves out of a pen. Like if I need to lope up in front of this calf to stop it, like we can do that. And that is how you would do it on the ranch. Like if follow a lot of the big ranches and stuff, and like at the 4.6s, like they're not gonna not turn that cow around in the alleyway because they gotta lope for two steps to get there or holler at her or whatever it might be, right? So I think it's closer to what actually occurs than people oftentimes give it credit for.
I mean, absolutely. Ranch sorting is in fact something that every working cowboy on a ranch is doing all the time. Yeah. So yeah, no. And cattle have a mind of their own. They're going to have their own opinions.
Yes, exactly. And it's so funny to me because like working at the Thorlickson feed yards, you know, that's a 30,000 head feed yard. And when you see stuff and people saying like, oh, you would get thrown off the ranch for yelling like that, I'm like, have you ever worked a bunch of cows? Like, I'm not saying we're yelling all the time, but sure enough, if something doesn't turn around, like you're gonna start yelling at it. And it's just kind of funny because it's closer to being really accurate than it is to not being accurate at all of, you know, what the foundation for the sport was supposed to be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, for those who want to learn more, obviously we have Ride TV's training series with you, but you're very active on social media. You guys have a website, you do videos. Can you kind of tell people where to find you?
Yeah. Great place is Facebook. Like everything we've got, you know, I've got a personal Facebook page just under my name, and then the Lazy JWC Ranch Facebook page, and there's links to our website, our Patreon account, and then our website is lazyjwcranch.com. I would say, you know, I'm relatively techie because I am in my 20s, but
you're young.
Yeah, I do a better job of staying up to date with all the happenings on Facebook than I would on our website. But our website gives all the information and in links to everything. But yeah, if you want to find out more about it, those are some great places. And the website's got my phone number and Facebook's got my phone number and everything. And yeah, if you're really interested, give me a call. I like to talk on the phone. You know, I like to talk. So if someone's interested and really curious, feel free, reach out.
And you also do clinics every once in a while. So that's something else to keep in mind, because the clinics are an amazing way to kind of get involved in the sport and truly understand what it is you're trying to do.
Yeah. We do clinics. And I try to keep up a good clinic schedule. I should do a better job of making those easy to find for people. But we'll be in, you know, anyone in the Arizona area will be there, these first couple weeks of December doing clinics, and that'll all be posted. But I try and do quite a few clinics around the country, probably 6 a year. In different areas, but I think that's a great place. Something that I didn't do a whole lot when I was starting out was go to a lot of clinics, and they can be a little bit tedious for, you know, somebody that is already involved in the ranch sorting, you know, if you want to just go practice. But I think that's something that, and I might just use this platform to say this, but like if you go to a clinic, or especially one of my clinics, and for better or for worse, I'm going to present it as a clinic. Like, I'm going to try and use this time to divulge as much information as I can. I've got some of my own personal things that I like to hit on at every clinic that just from traveling and competing, I think people need to work on. But then I want to set up different situations and answer people's questions. But I'm going to spend a lot of time trying to give as much information as I possibly can for the public to take home and be able to work on, and then, you know, give drills and all these other things for people to take home. But I think that's maybe a bit of a misconception in our industry, is a lot of times clinics are just like a guided practice, essentially. And that is not the structure of how my clinics are going to generally be. So better not trying to offend anybody, but that's just how I set mine up. I want to try and give as much information as I possibly can. And if people have questions, we'll answer the questions, but I'm going to spend a lot of time talking and just try and spew information out there. Cause that's something that I didn't have that I wish I would have a bit more, or at least, you know, in a lot of what I think about a lot is like, I had a ton of opportunities when I was a kid. I got to go to so many different people's places and all these different shows and travel. And, you know, so I could just kind of pick up on stuff from sitting on the fence and watching, you know, that old adage, you know, just sit on the fence and watch. But it would be easier to, you know, just be able to go to a clinic and get to pick somebody's brain for 4 or 5 hours or whatever it is. So that's how I try to make my clinics. I'm going to give you a ton of information. And, you know, feel free to record, like lots of people take videos during the clinics and stuff. Feel free to record it, take it home, you know, so you can practice stuff. But that's how mine are going to be set up a little bit more. But I think that, you know, and we're starting to get more and more that way, I think, in our clinics and in all this other stuff that you guys are doing with Ride TV and stuff is going to just help that more and more. But yeah, I'll try and stay up to date better with clinics going on throughout the country. But it's a great way to learn. I think I sure enough will give you lots of words during one of my clinics to think about, you know, whether or not they make any sense is up to you guys. But I'll sure talk a lot and try to divulge information. There's no secrets. I don't have any secrets. So if you have a question, just ask.
I think that's great. And it's so funny that you said that it's not going to just be a guided practice, because when we had done a clinic with Brad Barkemeyer and it was on team roping, Brad is obviously a cow horse professional, but he also dabbles in some of the team roping. And I remember one of the guys who was participating in clinic was like, man, this is the worst I've ever roped. And Brad was just like, we're not trying to get good runs in. Yeah. We're trying to school our horses to teach them something. Like, it's okay if we miss the cow or you don't get it as fast as you would like. That's not the takeaway. The takeaway is all of these drills you can do to make it count when it matters.
Yes. Yes, exactly. That was something I always find at my clinics, because I like to leave a little bit of time, typically at the end of a session, to make kind of some more live action type runs. And I try to preface it with, hey, we're still, you know, if there's an easy opportunity that presents itself, go make an effective cut, right? And you know, if they want to lay out an order, just go do your deal. But it's crazy, people that are riding all day and going through the drills really well and smooth and controlled, and then as soon as you're like, okay, here, yo, you know, go make a run, and it, the foundation, the wheels fall off the wagon so quickly, and then we wonder why we're having issues and stuff. But it, yeah, clinics, I really think clinics are meant to be clinics. Like, you know, bring a green horse or bring something that you need to work on. I would get way more out of that than, or I would think you'd get more, way more out of that than bringing your best horse. Like, I use my clinics too as an opportunity. It gives me an awesome opportunity to work some younger horses and make them be patient and stuff. And like, you won't ever see me on one of my open horses at a clinic, probably, because they don't need that. The ones that need some work are there for a reason. So.
Absolutely. Well, Cody, thank you so much for talking with us today. It was awesome to learn a little bit more about you and the growth of range sorting. Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. This was super cool. You guys are doing some awesome things with our industry, so we appreciate that.
Once again, we'd like to thank Tribute Equine Nutrition for sponsoring this episode of The Ride. Thank you guys for tuning into The Ride Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and please be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow Horse and Rider Magazine on social media and find us at horseandrider.com to see all the cool things that we're up to. And if you have any comments or questions, please be sure to hit us up at horseandrider@equinenetwork.com. We want to hear from you guys. And if you like what you're listening to, please be sure to leave us a review on iTunes.